Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
Welcome back. It's game night. Melnick in the Afternoon, TSN 690. We'll take you right to the Irish Embassy pregame show at 7. Then face-off time, Dan Roberts and Sergio Mameso. This is a good one tonight. The Canadiens and the Nashville Predators. Along with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, David Trentadue is helping us out. Some Paul Delorier band to kick things off here. Their bassist in this very studio over the summer, Greg Morency. Congratulations, félicitations, bass player of the year by the Canadian Blues Society, so named last night.
I think it was the longest I've been center in two and a half years, so, and I feel comfortable, but there's still obviously areas I would need to work on, and I mean, I like the experience, and I'm here as a player. I don't make decisions. I'm just happy to play anywhere.
Here comes Pierre Maguire.
Pierre Maguire on TSN 690 is brought to you in part by Dagwood Sandwiches and Salads. Bite into Dagwood's fully loaded, fabulous new oven-grilled beef and pepperoni sandwiches. Dagwood's delicious.
In Pittsburgh, you know, he's always been a Penguin. Pierre Maguire, how you doing?
I'm proud to say that. I'm doing well, Mitch. How are you?
I know you are. Now, you told us yesterday, you worked St. Louis, Colorado last night, that the St. Louis Blues are as good as any team in the NHL right now. And I would imagine, with Pekka Rinne, that would include Nashville.
Absolutely. And guess who they get to play when they get back? They have a home and home. It's Nashville, St. Louis. So we'll find out after the All-Star break where this whole thing is going. What I saw last night in the second period of the St. Louis-Colorado game was probably the best one-period performance I've seen from an NHL team this year. It was utter and sheer domination off the cycle, off the forecheck, off transition, St. Louis over Colorado. It was an amazing thing to watch, just how well St. Louis played in the second period of their game last night.
Yeah, one of Pierre's favorite players.
Steen with goals in five straight, the nine-game point streak, matching a season best. Short rebound, scores!
There's Jaden Schwartz, as called by Chris Cuthbert.
Jaden is probably, if not the most efficient player in the league, one of the most efficient players. And I talk about Patrice Bergeron, Jonathan Toews, Jaden Schwartz, guys that are really efficient in all facets of the game. They very seldom make mistakes. They know when to move the puck. They know who to move the puck to. They know how to finish plays off. They're fundamentally sound. Watch Schwartz score last night. He gets a pass from David Backes. The initial shot doesn't go in, but rather than going to the corner, he goes right towards the net after he shoots the puck and finishes the play off. Pass a real good Semyon Varlamov. That's what I'm talking about, efficient players in the league. There are a lot of guys that are very efficient, but I would say that Toews, Bergeron, Schwartz might be right at the top of the list around the league.
Well, they're having a great year. You know, they're a lot to handle, I think. Offensively, the way they play the game. Defensively, I think we're going to have to be real sharp with what we do. But offensively, they've got forwards that can score. They can cycle in the offensive zone. Power play is dangerous. Especially teams are good for them, generally speaking.
Peter Laviolette, maybe based on the last couple of games about the power play, but
yeah.
Certainly impressed by the Canadiens being where they are in the other conference.
Well, he should be impressed. I mean, he knows how well Michel Therrien is coached this year, even though he's in a different conference. They watch games too. Kevin McCarthy, his longtime assistant, is someone I know well, and I know Kevin does a lot of work there for him. And Phil Halsey, obviously, is the other assistant. But they'll be prepared. Nashville. One of the things, and again, I know Montreal fans don't see them a lot. You watch how hard the Nashville Predators are to forecheck. They spend very little time in their own zone. Now, they don't have Ryan Ellis. At least they haven't had Ryan Ellis. I don't know if he's due to play tonight or not. But when they have all their guys, and I'm talking about Roman Josi, Weber, Seth Jones, Matthias Ekholm, they are almost an impossible team to forecheck. And that's one of the reasons why they're so successful.
He is not playing. Ryan Ellis is not playing. Yeah. Talk about they seem to have a few guys that are emerging maybe impact might be too strong a word, but important players all at the same time on the forward lines and on the blue line.
Oh, well, on the back end for sure. Seth Jones, I told you when he was taken fourth overall, that was one of the greatest heists in the history of the NHL draft, and it's starting to be proven right now. In terms of Ryan Ellis, this is a guy that played in three World Juniors. A tremendously talented player, fantastically talented player, and was the captain of the Windsor Spitfire team that did some phenomenal things. So you're talking about high-end players on their back end that were basically pilfered in the draft because other teams didn't pay attention to how good they were at the junior level. But the one thing I would say about Nashville is Peter's gone in there and has been really insulated because of general manager's decisions to go out and get James Neal and also to get Mike Ribeiro and the acquisition of Philip Forsberg. So when you have a first line where none of the guys were actually playing for your group last year that comes in and can dominate the opposition, that's a lot. That says a lot about aggressive managing. So Peter's been the beneficiary of some really good managing by David Poile.
I mean, just I'm still young. I mean, just at 20 years old, and there's hopefully be here for a long time, and just gotta keep getting better and better and faster and stronger and stuff like that. So just gotta try to keep playing good.
There is Philip Forsberg. George McPhee sees him in his dreams every night.
Well, you know, again, the one thing that everybody's gonna point a finger at George, and I understand that he's no longer there. The thing is that when George made that move, he also got Michael Latta, who's still there in Washington, by the way. But they were looking for some veteran presence that could come in and help them right away for a playoff push. And Martin Erat wasn't able to do it. But that's why they did that. And then Latta was obviously insurance in case Erat didn't pan out. And he didn't. But
That's a bad trade. Pierre, that's a bad trade.
I agree with you. I'm saying, but you can see why Washington did it.
No.
They were trying to, at the time you could because they were trying to make the push.
Philip,
they had so many playoff disappointments. I wasn't a fan of the deal. I said it at the time. Much like some other
trades. You have a hard time coming down hard on George McPhee. I understand that. Well, I understand.
Well,
but that was a
bad trade.
That was a bad one. Go ahead, Gallo.
It was a bad one. I agree. But I said it at the time, Mitch, too.
Yep.
Just wondering, Pierre, if you think Nashville can go on a run with the group that they have at center ice, though.
That's the biggest question. And part of it is because you wonder about the checking ability. The one thing I would say is if Mike Fisher's healthy, they can. But again, it comes down to numbers. And the one thing I've been looking at, I'll just use the example of St. Louis, who obviously is going to be a big part of this, and I'll use the example of Chicago. In St. Louis, it's David Backes, big, physical, nasty guy. And then you go deeper into the lineup, and you see a fourth line with Ryan Reeves, a fourth line with Steve Ott, guys that can just absolutely punish you, Maxime LaPierre. You just start looking at the numbers and you start to see how robust and physical some of these better teams are. You look at Chicago right down the middle. I mean, it's amazingly deep. And Marcus Kruger is their fourth line center in Chicago. On most teams, either two or three. So, again, it just shows you the depth of some of these teams. So that's going to be the biggest question mark, I think, for Nashville.
First, we praise Mike Ribeiro.
I mean, everyone's been treating. He's been awesome too. I mean, to be completely honest with you, I don't really know what's been going on lately with him. I mean, I haven't been in the league with him that long, so he's just like any other player coming in here, and he's awesome. He's treating everyone really good, and everyone's treating him really good too. So he's been a positive thing for us for sure.
I can tell you that Mike Ribeiro has been excellent this year, and I can talk about his on ice play and. I could mention systems and maybe even talk about the power play, but I don't talk too much about contracts and that sort of thing. That goes way above me. But certainly, if you're asking me if I'm happy with Mike Ribeiro, I sure am. He's been an excellent addition to our team.
On that one-year deal, after having personal issues that are well chronicled, he's doing the job through a half of the season and more than most people expected.
Urgency is an important part of a player's life. And there's urgency when you're working on a one-year deal, and that's why you've heard me say many times I'm not a fan of these long-term contracts. I want to keep guys humble, and I want to keep guys hungry and motivated, and I think that's one of the things that can motivate a player is having short-term deals, especially if you have a team full of players with short-term deals. But again, Mike's been fantastic. I told you that at the top of the show. He's been very, very good. And Philip Forsberg's success, part of that is Philip, but part of that is also Mike Ribeiro's puck distribution skills. And another part of it is the big body and the skating and the finishing ability of James Neal. So that threesome's been very, very good together. And Mike's a big part of it.
Okay, now we'll bury him a little bit. He made the rounds up the street here on French television, TVA, and RDS, L'Antichambre, last night.
Pour moi, je voulais juste apprendre, puis j'étais bien, tu sais, j'étais content d'être deuxième, puis je voulais pas, tu sais, il y avait assez de pression.
Mais c'était pas l'amour fou entre vous deux.
Non, je pense pas qu'il était, qu'il m'aimait trop, puis je le sentais aussi, je le sentais.
Donc l'esprit d'équipe faisait un peu défaut de voir que c'était comme ça, au lieu de t'amener tranquillement, puis de te souhaiter la bienvenue, puis t'aider, c'était pas ça.
C'était là. Plus,
plus de la haine.
De la haine ou de la jalousie, je pense.
All right. You'll remember, Pierre, when there was an altercation in practice between Ribeiro and Saku Koivu.
Yes.
And
yes,
some suggested that Saku was becoming jealous of Mike Ribeiro's status in Montreal and emergence as a guy who's pushing him out of the number one slot in at center ice. And I was among those who were trying to explain that with Koivu and Craig Revé part of the leadership group, they didn't like Mike Ribeiro's act. They didn't like the fact that he took it easy in practice. They didn't like the fact that maybe he didn't work hard enough to prepare for games. It wasn't jealousy. But all this time later, in the almost immediate aftermath of the Koivu, incredible Koivu retirement ceremony, to go back on that and continue to, there are things that cannot be said what Mike Ribeiro did here in Montreal. He had to be traded.
Again, that's, you know how Peter Laviolette talked about how he's not talking about contracts, it's above him. I don't know enough about what went on, except I've heard the rumors about everything, and I don't put a lot of stock in rumors, but usually where there's some smoke, there's some fire, and there's a reason why he's moved now a fair bit. But I will say this, I'm just going to judge the player as the player, and the player is somebody that's played extremely well. I don't know why they have to rehash things that happened a long time ago. Mike probably played his way out of Montreal, just as other players have played their way out of Montreal, including a Hall of Fame defenseman by the name of Chris Chelios, for those that maybe don't remember.
Pierre, Mike Ribeiro could have owned this town. Local kid, came up the hard way, incredibly talented with his vision on the ice. He was cocky, but he would have a ton of personality, but he was responsible. Nobody else. He was responsible for moving on. Nobody else.
But I absolutely agree with you, but I'm not burying the player because the player is really useful. Things happen, especially with young players that get rushed into the NHL. But I want to give credit where credit's due. I'll never forget this story. I was on a plane ride with Michel Bergeron, fatigue, and we were talking about players and prospects. And he was telling me about Mike Ribeiro. And he's saying, Pierre, you'll see, this is one of the most creative young players I've ever seen. He was right on the mark. And he nailed it because Mike Ribeiro is one of the most creative players you will see. That doesn't mean he's the best player, but he's an extremely talented, very creative player. And I'll never forget Bergie telling me that. And my admiration for Michel was always there because he was such a fiery coach and such a tough guy as an NHL person. But man, oh man, did he have that player nailed. He just nailed that player.
It's how we play, in injuries and chemistry or not chemistry, stuff like that happens. So I just got to be ready, whatever I play on the wing or play at center.
All right, once again, as we heard from the top, Alex Galchenyuk. How long, this is a question you don't know the answer to, but assuming the Canadiens are more or less the rest of the season, what we've seen so far, do you see this moving back and forth? Galchenyuk, yep. Left wing, center left wing.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the best lines I ever heard was from Scotty Bowman, because you're talking about different players in different positions and sometimes Mario going on the line with Ronnie Francis. And, you know, you say all the time, it's so overrated. It's just a starting position in a face-off situation. He was right. When you think about it, players, the way we play the game today, they're not lineal. They're moving all over the place. They're moving from right to left to center. They're moving all over. Everything's fluid in our game today because you have so much interchanging of lanes. So really, when you think about it, outside of coming out of your own zone, and even then sometimes with the tight reverses between defensemen and center or tight reverse between wingers and defensemen, that's about, you know, it changes too. It's just a starting point. So I could see that. Absolutely, I could see it changing for him over time.
Nathan Beaulieu is now up to 52 NHL games, and he really seems to be comfortable the last few weeks. What is the magic number? What number of games in an NHL career do teams kind of use as a benchmark when a player kind of graduates from being that really raw, really young player to someone who's a bit more reliable?
80. You know, a season's 82 games. I think once you get there and you've proven that you can handle it over time and you see constant progression, that's when I think it's there. So I would say 80 to 82.
He's taking a lot of pride to be considering two-way players. He understands the game a lot more than a few years ago, and that's part of the process. He competes. He's playing both sides of the ice really well. He's got tremendous speed. So he's capable to take time and space on good hockey player.
Michel Therrien on Max Pacioretty, who's having the best season of his career. I don't care what goal total he ends up with. Two-way player.
Come on, I'm glad you said that, because he can't even be in the All-Star game? What a joke.
Well, the All-Star game's a joke, Pierre. You know how I feel about it.
All-Star weekend's great, but I'm telling you, this just ticked me off when he didn't make it. That's ridiculous.
But, you know, Mitch Gallo made the comparison to Phil Kessel about the progression of the two players, right? Just a few years ago, he would have laughed at saying Pacioretty is better than Kessel all around. Right. And now he's, you know, that's the reality. It's not just Kessel. James Van Riemsdyk, right, is a really good offensive player. Not good. Apparently has not learned how to play the other end of the ice.
It's interesting.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
Well, I just, you know, in the aftermath, we're going to have Dave Bedini, who is dying as a longtime Leaf fan. He is absolutely dying about the raining of sweaters down on the he hates that with a passion. So he's going to join us in about 20 minutes from Toronto. But what do you make of the latest debacle at the ACC?
Well, first of all, let's get to Max, and then we'll go to the debacle all at right. The ACC. For Max, it was about growing up in an organization and learning how to play. And one of the best things that happened to Max was he went to Taft, then he went to the USHL, and then he went to the University of Michigan. So there was constant progression from mid-Fairfield to Taft to the USHL to the University of Michigan. All along the way, excellent coaches, including one, Red Berenson, at the University of Michigan, who preaches defense before he preaches anything else. Then he had a chance to break in Montreal, and he spent time in the American Hockey League. And he learned at the American Hockey League level, played in a World Junior in part of beats in the Czech Republic. One of his teammates, James Van Riemsdyk. Amazing how all this stuff comes to fruition. Pacioretty gets it. He understands the game, and he's proud to be a Montreal Canadian. James Van Riemsdyk gets drafted by the Philadelphia Flyers. Instead of going to junior like they wanted him to do, he chose to go to the University of New Hampshire, where it was a much easier game for him and a different kind of experience. He eventually leaves there, goes to Philadelphia, plays with a very good centerman by the name of Claude Giroux, and does extremely well, but gets traded. So his psyche's been hurt. He now is in Toronto. Not enough center ice people like Claude Giroux. Different kind of pressure, different kind of environment, not winning. Everybody jumps on him, confidence shattered. That's what happens. Now, about learning how to play in their own end, they've gone through coaches there. They've gone through coaches. So the system changes all the time. People change all the time. Organizational ideas change all the time. And that's when you get players lost. It's just sad. It's very sad.
So what's next? What's next for the Leafs, other than crossing your fingers and hope that they start scoring and winning games a little bit? Or should they want to, at this point, bottom out like the Habs did?
Oh, come on. Why bottom out? There's not a player in the league that wants to bottom out. You think those guys felt good about the game last night?
No, I don't.
You know better than anybody.
I know. I've argued about how competitive professional athletes are. I understand that. But from an organizational standpoint, how do you allow, for example, Dave Nonis, who has made some really bad moves, what's he doing? Do you have him work the phones?
First of all, let's get this straight. This isn't a referendum on Dave Nonis. I've been telling you for over 3 weeks after they fired Randy Carlyle, this is a referendum on Brendan Shanahan. He's the one running the organization. He's the one that wanted new assistants for Randy Carlyle. He got those new assistants. He's the one that wanted the assistant GMs replaced. So Dave Nonis didn't have his handpicked guys like Dave Poulin, like Claude Loisel. So those guys got jettisoned. They brought in the analytics guys. That hasn't worked out. So let's just put this where it belongs, at the feet of Brendan Shanahan. He's the one who's, this is a referendum on him now and his ability to lead an organization into the promised land. And it's one thing to sit back and do it in a war room. It's another thing to do it in reality. And we'll see how it pans out. I don't think it's fair to prejudge him. I really don't. I don't think it's fair to prejudge him at all. But if you look at the moves that have been made on his watch so far, they have not worked. Because I can tell you, Dave Nonis didn't want Randy Carlyle to have a different staff, and he sure didn't want to have different assistant general managers. So who made those moves?
No, but he, you know, that Clarkson deal is a killer. That, you know, there's no denying that, right? I mean,
there's no denying that one. No denying that one. Dave Clarkson's deal is not a very good deal. No, it's not.
Pierre, just as far as the fact that, you know, everyone on the roster, they've acquired via trade or free agency, is it an issue in Toronto that they don't draft well, or is it an issue that they don't develop the players that they drafted well?
Well, let's go back to the potential of what they would have had they not made the Phil Kessel deal and build off of that. I think they'd be more ahead of the game if they would have kept Tyler Seguin, the ability to draft him, and the ability to draft Dougie Hamilton. Would you not agree?
Right.
So that was made under Brian Burke's watch. I think Brian tried to hasten the development there and move draft picks and young prospects trying to get established NHL players. Guys like Clark MacArthur, who's now obviously in Ottawa, guys like Joffrey Lupul, you know, Jake Gardner, so Dion Phaneuf. You can go down the line. Those were they went for professional players rather than drafting players. So it was a different organizational mindset.
Tyler Seguin, Dougie Hamilton, that's a pretty good team right there right now.
Well, that's why I bring it up. It's amazing how people forget over time how some of this stuff happens. But a lot of this happened because they forgot about the – and I don't think they forgot about it. I shouldn't say that. It's not fair. They put more of a focus on professional additions rather than drafting, cultivating, and eventually bringing in Toronto Maple Leafs. If you look at their farm team, for instance, Dallas Eakins got an NHL job in Edmonton because of the success he had with the Toronto Marlies. How many of those were prospect players, and how many of those were older guys just trying to win in the marketplace? Check it out.
You know, I would say, though, like, I'll concede on Tyler Seguin because he was a number two, but I would say if the Leafs were put in the position to draft seventh the following year, that they would have probably passed on Dougie Hamilton and made a bad pick with that selection because they don't know how to draft.
Yeah, I don't believe that because I know Brian Burke extremely well, and the one thing I know about Brian is he has a huge premium on defensemen. That's one of the reasons why he made the Phaneuf trade, and that's one of the reasons why he brought in Jake Gardner. Huge premium on defense. And I can tell you, I sat with him in the war room, Mitch Gallo, the day he made the deal with Doug Risebrough so that we can make a three-way deal with Calgary and San Jose to get the second overall pick in the 1992 draft so we could take Chris Pronger. I can tell you that right now. Or 93 draft, excuse me, so we could take Chris Pronger. So, believe me, I've seen the man work the phones, and I know what he's about, and he would have taken Dougie Hamilton if he would have had that draft pick.
2 hours away from the Canadiens and the Nashville Predators, Carey Price is back for the Habs. Pekka Rinne is not for the Predators. What kind of game are we going to see tonight?
Well, that's the one thing. Again, I don't know if anybody asked Peter Laviolette about that, but Pekka's been so good for them. Now, I'm not knocking Carter Hutton, and I don't know if Carter's playing tonight or not.
Yep.
But it's a different situation than when Tech is in there. Now I talked to you about how hard it is to forecheck their team, and fans are going to see that. And the one player you really want to watch tonight, everybody's going to talk about Shea Weber, and they should. He's a great player. Watch Roman Josi.
His partner.
Just watch Roman Josi. He might be the best defenseman in the league that nobody, whether you watch a ton of games or very few games, nobody knows. This guy's really that good a player. And David Poile will tell you, almost every general manager in the league has tried to pick his pocket and get Roman Josi out of there. He's a tremendous, tremendous talent.
Pierre McGuire every day at 5:05. Enjoy the games tonight. Enjoy Pittsburgh some more, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Mitch. I really appreciate it. Have a good night, everybody.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.